Welcome to Respond to Resilience. I'm David Dashinger, along with Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMT, and we'll be speaking with columnist and author Ann Galliano and her spouse, retired Seattle Fire Captain Mike Galliano, about how firefighters and their spouses can build and maintain a strong, fulfilling, and lasting marriage. We'll also discuss the mission of the firefighter versus the mission of the firefighter's spouse. And just a reminder to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Respond to Resilience, and our Facebook page, Respond to Wellness, Inc. And you can watch all our past episodes on respondertv.com. So we'll be right back to speak with Ann and Mike right after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW, EMTB. We're going to do a deep dive into the topic of firefighter marriage, and it probably spills over into responder marriage. Let's tell you a little bit about our guest today. Ann Galliano is an author, lecturer, and spouse of retired Seattle Fire Captain Mike Galliano for over 35 years. Her fire engineering article, What Every Firefighter's Spouse Should Know, and her ongoing contributions to firelife.com have inspired couples all over the world to seek a fulfilling, lasting, and intimate marriage despite the challenges posed by the fire service. She and Mike lecture across the country on building and maintaining a strong marriage with principles derived specifically from her three decades worth of experience as a fire law enforcement and military wife. They're co-authors of the best-selling fire engineering book, Challenges of the Firefighter Marriage, and that highlights the many joys and challenges of love, fun, and passion in a first responder marriage. Mike Galliano has Mike Galliano has over 33 years of fire crash and rescue experience with the Seattle Fire Department and the U.S. Air Force. He's retired as the captain of Ladder 5 and remains a proud member of Fire Station 31. Mike has written numerous fire service articles, and he's a co-author of best-selling books for about air management for the fire service, Challenges of the Firefighter Marriage, and he's written the SCBA chapter of the Handbook for Firefighter 1 and 2 from Penwell. Mike also co-hosts the popular fire engineering radio webcasts, Mikey G and Mikey D Show, and he partners with his wife, Ann, who has a column in firelife.com, where they teach strategies for developing and maintaining a strong marriage family. So after that incredible bio, let's dive in and and learn more about what you do, about your book, and how people can apply some of the principles that you guys have obviously discovered in your long marriage.
You know, I want to welcome both of you as well. And I just think I have to put this out there. I know it's hard if you're listening to this and not watching, but the chemistry that I see on the screen and just feel from both of you, it exudes. So I just want you to know that. And I think that's going to bring so much to this topic for us.
Thank you.
Yeah,
careful what you wish for. You know, you get us going, and then you might wish the video would be shut off. So,
so Mike, how did you become interested in spotlighting the topic of challenges of firefighting marriage? I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, you know, I'll kick it to Ann to describe that, but it had its genesis in me being assigned to the training division. In a job the size of Seattle Fire, over 1,000 uniformed members, it's not unheard of to go your whole career and there's, you know, 10, 15, 20% of the department that you'll never even meet, much less, you know them. You won't even meet them. You'll, you know, you might see a name or something. You can lose contact really quick. And my recruit academy while we were close in recruit academy, and we tried to stay, you know, connected. We all got dispersed out to the various parts of Seattle Fire, and most of us, if you weren't in the same battalion or in the same shift, you definitely lost contact. I got assigned to the training division when I became a captain, because when you promote, unless you're a dud, you're going to get an administrative assignment. It's just the way it is. And so I dodged, and I loved being on the rigs and going to fires. That was the thing I loved. I dodged as much as I could, but once I became a captain, an admin assignment was coming my way. And so I fell on the sword to go to the training division because it kept me connected with the streets, and I liked the training side of things. The interesting thing that happened is now I'm seeing everybody, because everybody comes through the training division. So I was seeing people I hadn't seen for a long time. It was heartbreaking to have people that I know were really good people and cool people that I went through Recruit Academy with, and I'd known their, you know, at least some of them, I had known their spouses, I had seen their kids, and it was just one after another, you know, coming in to say, hey, hi, how you doing? How's your family? And, you know, boy, a lot of the same refrain, you know, the marriage had split up, the relationship had split up, they're on a new relationship, they're trying to navigate, you know, the divided households and holidays in different places, and some of them, you know, into court battles and all that kind of stuff. You know, I don't want to over describe it, but it was heartbreaking. It was terrible. And I guess, you know, I'll let Ann finish the story, but I came home to her kind of looking for some answers, because I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to articulate that our relationship had survived it and we had figured out how to navigate it. And so it kind of began with a simple question, you know, of, and, you know, be careful what you ask for. Simple question of, are we that hard to live with? You know, is the fire service, you know, that difficult at home? Right. I'll let her pick up the answer to that.
Yes. Mike's a really friendly guy and very approachable and very kind. And he was finding at the end of the training day that a lot of the firefighters were making their way to his office and seeking advice, seeking counseling, seeking comfort. And many of them were saying, you know, you're still married. My marriage is falling apart. Do you have any advice for me? And right. Mike just, like you said, he didn't know what to say. So he asked me, he said, you know, again, are we kind of hard to live with? Is there something about this profession that is difficult? And I said, oh yeah. And by this time, we've been married almost 24 years. So we've been married a long time. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, do you have any ideas on, you know, advice I can give, you know, things that are difficult that we've overcome? Do you have any advice? I said, oh yeah, lots of ideas.
Some of us might be harder to live with than others, just for you know.
So he said, jot a few of them down, you know, on a little post-it note. And so I have something to say next time somebody asks me. And I really thought about it, because we had about 24 years of marriage at this point. I really thought about it, really brainstormed the things that we'd been through, the things, and tried to put it into words. You know, they're ideas, but to put it into words is easier said than done. And so by the time I was done, I handed him a typed 10-page annotated document, 10 pages. And he was just like, wow, I thought I was going to get a post-it note, you know, with some ideas. And so that's how it started. And it started with, again, our own experience, a love of this job, but also remembering the tough stuff we've been through. And we were married before he became a firefighter. So I had a little bit of the advantage of seeing changes that I knew were related to the fire service.
Right.
We also had the unfortunate experience of nobody tells you anything, especially way 4 decades ago when we started all this. They don't tell you a thing. They don't tell you what you're going to go through emotionally, mentally, sleep deprivation, all of it. You just are thrown into the meat grinder and expected to survive. And fortunately for us, we did. So that's how it all started, was
right.
That question, are we tough to live with? And the answer was yes.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at FairfieldCountyTRT.
Can you go a little deeper into what exactly is tough about living with a firefighter? Like, what are some of the things that make us hard to live with?
When I was thinking about it, again, when somebody asks you that question and trying to put it into words, the first thing I looked at was, well, what is different about this job than any other job? There is something very different about, especially being a firefighter. And I came up with three primary differences. Again, nobody ever articulated this to us before. But I realized, you know, my husband is exposed to danger. He puts his life on the line. There have been many instances where he was hurt or nearly killed over, you know, 33 years. And he's exposed to traumatic events, which is witnessing. Trauma just means witnessing human suffering. And he probably has gone on more traumatic runs than dangerous ones. I mean, there's a lot of trauma. So danger, trauma. And then add to that the third element that most professions don't have, and that is a 24-hour shift, sleep deprivation. So those three things have huge impact. And we battled those for many decades, watching his life nearly threatened, watching him get injured, watching him have what we call the tough runs, you know, the traumatic runs, and then the inability over time to not only are they sleep deprived, but they have trouble sleeping. They develop sleep issues and the inability to sleep. And as a spouse, you bet I saw all of this because he's my buddy. He's my friend. I love him. And to watch him with those three huge things impacting him, that's where I started, was those main differences that most people don't go through. Most desk jobs don't risk their lives. They risk their life driving on the road and all that, but very unique to this profession. And then from there, I just kind of went through examples of very clear memories of incidences of fighting or misunderstanding each other and how we worked through those and how they related to danger, trauma, sleep deprivation. So that's where it all started. I guess I can just go through, again, a lot of stuff bouncing around in your head. And I was able to narrow it down into what I called kind of the five primary impacts, five topics. And I called them, eventually narrowed it down. It just kind of narrows down. To basically five conversations that we needed to have as a fire couple that are related to these five topics. And that's kind of where the nuts and bolts come into it of what you can actually do. There's all these ideas, but they all fell into kind of five conversations because conversation is necessary for a good marriage. You have to be able to talk about these things and not fight about them. Be able to have the discussion, have them when you're not angry, have them ahead of time. And those five conversations led ultimately to the book and the class and a nuts and bolts hands-on way to really help couples look at these things, talk about them, and work it out. And so that's where we started. And the first one, I see it as one of your questions.
Well, if I could real quick, here's why the conversation thing worked really well. It was brilliant how she did it. by making it a conversation about a difficult topic, it personalized it for you instead of trying to fit into the cookie cutter of what we did. Because we're different than you. We got a different setup. We got a, you know, we come from different places. We believe different things. Some have kids, you know what I mean? So many different variables. Trying to talk about relationships with all the variables that are out there was overwhelming. And I'll tell you, we don't even spend much time there anymore. Your variables and what's unique to you is unique to you. Rock on, have a party. You got to make it work, right? but the conversations are consistent amongst us. These are things that have got to be dealt with, and then you apply your variables and your priorities and your beliefs to those. But if you don't have these conversations ahead of time, you're going to have them. You're just going to have them on the other side when damage is done and you're mad at each other, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why it ended up with this huge topic. The way she distilled it down, it really helped to personalize it for the reader or the student, not just do what Mike and Ann did, because some of what we did will not apply. You know, some of the things we did won't. Other things you'll come up with will apply really well in your world that we would either not have thought of, or they just don't apply in our world based on how we do life.
Right.
So it sounds like it's more along the lines of being preventative. You know, if you could give this information to someone who starts tomorrow as a firefighter, then they could help to prevent some of this damage down the road if they have these conversations in a preventative manner with their spouse, significant other. Would you say that that's a little bit more of what you're trying to capture these days? Are you trying to get the information out quicker?
Absolutely. And a lot of the departments that we've taught our class in, they like the information preventative, and they actually, you know, here's our book. They buy the book for their recruit classes and give it to them right off the bat so they can have something on board to kind of help their marriage, because the spouse is going to see these changes that danger has physical repercussions, trauma has emotional repercussions, and sleep just helps them both be worse. Sleep deprivation helps them either be better or worse. And so the book, like you said, gives them a little bit of insight into what they're going to go through and then how to cope as a couple a little bit. Again, based on our experience, neither one of us are professional counselors or psychiatrists or psychologists, just our own hands-on experience based on failure and based on, you know, some of our successes. And so it's definitely preventative, and that's our heart. We want to save these young couples from some of the shipwrecks that we've seen, especially in our fellow firefighters, you know, save them some. And a lot of it's avoidable if somebody just tells you that it's not them, it's what they're going through, you know. And if you don't know, you can misconstrue or mistake some negative behaviors as character flaws when they're actually issues from what they're dealing with. So,
yeah, it's preventative, but also if you're in the middle of it, you don't know what's going on. It kind of nudges you to here's what's going on, or at least here's an idea of what's going on. So, I know a lot of the departments are that we're dealing with now are buying it for their new recruits, which I think is fantastic. You know, here's the storm that you're going into, and here's a raincoat and boots and everything else. But I really am desirous of the book or whatever getting into the hands of all couples, because, you know, the new recruits coming in, that's great that they're going to get it in advance. But a lot of your folks that have been dealing with it, navigating the trauma and the damage of so many years of careers, we're kind of hopeful that it gets in their hands too, in the hopes that they can, you know, sit down with their spouse and say, hey, it wasn't me hating you or loving the job more than you, or, you know, here is what was behind it. And from the spouse's perspective, the spouse can say to the firefighter, hey, man, here's what I see, you know.
Yeah.
And I know you got a tough job, so do I. And that's why it's a conversation where you can get on each other's side. And if we had to encapsulate it in any way, that's what we're trying to do. We are trying to get the relationship to get on each other's side, have each other's back, and know what's going on in the kind of the mm-hmm. clashes, and there's mm-hmm. solution there. You know, there's a resolution that can happen there versus just staking out your own side of the camp and, you know,
right.
throwing rocks.
Well, kind of to that point, do you have any specific advice that you could offer to first responders in general about how to be open and honest with their spouse when their spouse comes to them and says, hey, this is really difficult. These are the things I'm struggling with your work life. Do you have any really specific advice for those people?
Well, I would say I kind of start with, again, back to the five conversations. The first conversation, and it's probably the most important one of all, even though it seems very minor, it's actually the most important, and it's number one, and I call it re-entry time. And I start with this one for two reasons. It is that point in the day when you come back together as a couple. And for the firefighter couple, it's extra awkward because we're apart for so long. Most people are apart for maybe 8 hours, 10 hours. We're apart for as much as 24 to 48 hours. And that is a long time to be in separate worlds, drift apart, not communicate. And then you come back together. And I noticed that as a young fire wife, that is when we clashed. And once that clash at the door begins, your time together can be really bad. We would find ourselves fighting the entire time he's off, and then he goes back to work again and we drift apart again. And I think over time that one little thing, that reentry time going awry, leads to bigger problems and bigger problems and lack of communication and distance forming, because every time you come back together, it's awkward. And I, interestingly enough, I've been teaching this class a long time. Just in our last class this last year, I had a soldier who had just come back from Afghanistan, who became a firefighter, and he said his marriage is on the rocks from being a firefighter more so than it ever was from being in combat in Afghanistan. And I said, you're kidding me, that firefighting is harder than, and he said, it is because of that reentry time. Me having to go into battle and come home every day. And he said that transition is destroying my marriage. Whereas in combat, I'm there for a year and there's no in and out, back and forth trying. And it's, the problem is trying to shift gears. And it's an extreme world, that world of firefighting. He said it's very much like combat. This is a soldier saying this. And
he said it in a really funny way, a total firefighter way. He said, you know, when I was over in Iraq, you know, we would battle
Afghanistan,
we would go back, and he said the battle was done, and I'd joke with the guys, and then we'd go back into battle and joke with, you know, he said, here I go into battle, we'd go see all the stuff, and then I come home, it's like, oh, you mean I have to talk to you? You mean I have to take the kids? You mean what?
I have to be a husband. Yeah. I have to be tender. I have to be. So that's the first conversation, and I think it's the most critical. If you get nothing else, is you have to work on that reentry time, because it sets the tone for your time together. And I noticed that first as a young wife, him coming home, me excited to see him, and pouncing on him, you know, and wanting conversation, wanting connection, handing him the honey-do list, all these things broke while you were gone. And him standing there, bleary-eyed, irritated, withdrawing, and next thing you know, the whole tone is bad. So what we learned to do, and again, it took us a long time to figure this out. Nobody told us this. was to just give him re-entry time, give him time to come home, decompress, shift gears without pouncing on him and expecting an immediate connection and expecting deep emotional conversation, because that's what I needed, but it was clashing. And so if I gave him that time to do whatever he needed to do, take a nap, go work out, there's all kinds of things you can do, then later in the day, he is ready to connect with me, and now it's my turn. I need that sit down, talk with me. That's how I feel like your wife again, is if you sit and talk to me. And it took a little sacrifice, because I wanted it immediately, to give him that break, and it took him a little sacrifice. He was appreciative of that, so then later he would give it back to me. And when we just did that, it's just a simple thing, just give him time. But it comes from understanding, again, danger, trauma, up all night, tired. He's not in the best frame of mind to give me what I need. And to try to force that wasn't working. So that's why it's a conversation, because everybody's schedule is different. Sometimes you can't give him that break because you're leaving for work or whatever. But you have to work it out, find what works for you, or otherwise you're going to keep clashing and having this tension in the house, and then it just starts all over again when they go back on shift. So that's one example of something that can actually help you.
Great, great. Yeah, we're very good at preparing for the job, having like a routine, a ritual to get the rig checked, to get our gear checked, to make sure, for an officer, make sure our crew is ready and everything's set. But we don't really sometimes have the skills and tools to have that decompression reentry into the family life, into the home life. So thanks for sharing those examples. I think that's going to be really valuable. Because really it is a decompression time, whether it's your drive home, when you get home to have the opportunity to rest or to run, to exercise, something like that. So, yeah, great stuff.
Well, hey, here's the cool thing, too. Everything's reciprocal. Firefighter comes from their world into the world of home. And again, the reason it's a conversation, as Ann alluded to, not everybody can do it the same way because of conflicting schedules, kids. Again, the variables are more time than we have to even, open that up. You have the conversation, you figure it out, but this is real. This clashing is real. And if you don't deal with it, you are going to deal with it on the other side of really difficult things being said and really difficult things happening. That's what's important. And firefighters, everything we talk about is reciprocal. It's getting each other on each other's side. Your spouse figures out a way to give you that reentry time. You sort that out. It's also reasonable to anticipate that that would be given back to your spouse, whether it's coming home from their job where, you give them a gap, let them decompress from teaching everybody's, wonderful snowflakes in school or whatever, or even just, for some households, just getting a break from the kids and have an adult conversation and just getting a gap away from it to do. It's all reciprocal. That's why you have that chat together. Make it work for both of you.
So what do you think is different or similar in being in the fire service to other branches, police, EMS, corrections? What about being in the fire service is different about those jobs, and what is similar?
When she articulated the danger, trauma, and sleep debt, you can see some crossover there, because, in the EMS world, it's the same thing. You're seeing in the hospital world, you're seeing that type of stuff. You're seeing the trauma and the heartbreaking stuff that comes across. Quick second decisions and you don't have all the information, those types of things. Really odd working schedules. You're working a lot at one time, so your sleep stuff gets, you know, messed up. And that certainly applies to the military and to police. You can really see the kind of the intersection of those. If I had to describe one thing that I think is different in the fire service, it's we live together. You know, cops typically don't. They work together. That it happens some in the EMS, but not like in hospitals or what have you. You actually, you know, you go to your place of work, you do your work, and then you come home. A lot of the fire service is geared around you're in a firehouse, and you're sitting around a collective table, and you're having the meal, and it really impacts you form really tight bonds in a firehouse. You know, it's you sleep together and you eat together and, you know, you punch up together and joke each other, prank each other and all that. I would say that's the one distinct thing. And it can be a problem because it, you know, the fire service can actually, because you love it so much and you develop such strong bonds with the people you work with, it can pull you away from your family. You know, and Ann's described this really well. You know, at times, it's like, oh, yeah, I just went to a fire. I cut open this car. We just went to this, you know, crazy person that was, you know, throwing needles at us. And well, then you come home to, yeah, the toilet's broken.
Right.
You know, and I need you to go change that diaper. And it can end up being kind of a wah-wah and my problems don't matter as much.
Right.
It's why you have to be, you got to be really open to hearing the other person and where they're coming from. You know, it's not that I don't think your job saving lives isn't wonderful. And you know, she will say, I do think you're a hero.
Yeah.
But this is our life at home. This is the life we've created. And these things, while it may not be a building collapsing, if we don't get that step fixed, it's going to collapse. And, you know, in having that open conversation about it and not making home life feel mundane and just kind of, you know, no fun. Right. But what I get to do with these guys here is just awesome.
Well, I think the thing that's hard, and I resonate with this as an EMT myself, is that you do miss your family when you're on duty and you think about them the whole time you're there. And wow, I can't wait till I get home and they're going to be so excited to see me. And then when you get home, and sometimes you do have that interaction if you haven't slept or you're frustrated because of something you just saw. And you walk in the door and it doesn't go well. And then you have guilt about that. And you say, gosh, but I miss them so much. And now because of me, we're in this situation twice, right? Not only was I gone, but they were happy to see me. And now I've totally gotten rid of all of that. Right. And I know I've felt that way too. You know, that guilt and shame of, wow, you know, I didn't do what they needed me to do when I walked in the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're unavailable on shift, and then we can become unavailable when we get home because of that inability to shift and make the transition. And I guess this would be geared towards your expertise. Like, how do you explain the mission of a firefighter spouse? Like, what do you tell people who are maybe just getting into this as, you know, brand new firefighter couples? What kind of advice do you give them?
Be gentle.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of corny, but I'm a corny person. But I believe in what he's doing, and because he loves it so much, I've made a real effort to see what he's doing and know what he's doing. And he's been good about communicating it with me. I would say, and it's one of the conversations. One of the conversations is keep your first family first. I feel like I've been kind of the bridge between those two worlds, bridge over troubled waters, if you will, of keeping him connected to the family at home while still supporting his family at the firehouse, and trying to be there and navigate them both without being jealous. And the minute I do start to get jealous, like, you know, it feels like you love that family more than you love this one. Just reminding him of, hey, we're starting to drift apart. This is what I need. You need more time at home. This is what I see happening, and I'm not going to allow it because I need to be first. And a lot of firefighters, I think, get into trouble because they're called to be excellent. They're called to be part of a team, to train, to do all these things. That's what they're compelled to do, because if they mess up, people will die. I mean, life and death is intense. And as a spouse, I feel like I've always kind of been the one to pull him back a little bit and say, the firehouse will go on without you for a day or two. We need you here. The kids need you. I need you. And ultimately, that is what's best for him. If he loses us along the way, he's going to be very unhappy, and he knows that. And so as a first responder spouse, just kind of remember what they're doing matters. Lives are on the line. Without them, our society would absolutely collapse, and we're seeing that. With our first responders being, you know, segued out of the importance of our society, watch what happens. So we need them. They are essential. But I like to remind the spouse, they need you. You are essential to their well-being. Suicide is a problem. And the number one catalyst for suicide is divorce. That is the number one catalyst, because it cuts everything in half. Financially, takes away your emotional support. It takes away your kids. I mean, number one catalyst. And so spouses, we are essential. We are vital to the well-being of the fire service. And when you look at it that way, you are helping your responder do what they do. You're just as heroic as they are. In fact, I tell spouses, in some ways, you're more heroic because nobody knows what you do and what you suffer and what you see and what you sacrifice. So remember that you're getting to be part of a heroic mission, and your part is essential. Don't take that for granted. Be proud of who you are, because you are helping. And I remind the fire, Mike always tells the firefighters, remember, there's nothing more important than your own family. Keep them first. The fire service is going to end someday. And the one thing, you might be willing to sacrifice your life in the line of duty, but I bet most will say they were not willing to sacrifice their family. And unfortunately, that's a price they sometimes pay unknowingly, unwillingly. So I like to encourage spouses, again, our role is to remember who they are, and conversely, who we are, how much they need us. And together, we are actually making the world a better place, you know, making things better.
That's an amazing perspective. Thank you for that.
So we know, and you touched on this before, but we know that firefighters form very strong bonds with their coworkers because they live together, because they spend so much time together. What do you think are the positives and negatives of that reality?
Well, I don't know. There probably is a technical description, but it's the coolest thing in the world, you know, to love what you do and enjoy the people you do it with. That's the American dream, man. You know, here's an interesting thing. One of the tensions in households where there's a firefighter and then the spouse does work somewhere else, one of the tensions is the firefighter typically loves their job and the spouse hates their job. They hate going to work at the bank. They hate going to teach school. They hate going to pick up garbage. They hate selling cars. You know, it's a job. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the fire service, it does, for a lot of us, end up being really a calling, and we really enjoy it. That's part of the conversation you have, you know, to navigate that, because you're going to find out from your spouse on the other side. It's like, why are you coming home, you know, grumpy with me? You just got to go to a fire with your best buddies and have dinner at the firehouse, and they don't understand that it really had nothing to do with that. It's the emotions that get going and the things you've seen, and right, that you're half drunk from not being able to sleep, you know, and that, mm-hmm, those kinds of things. The positives are it allows you to do a better job at what you do. If you have a good cohesive team and everybody cares about each other and is looking out for each other, I think it allows you to perform at a much higher level when you really got to do stressful stuff in a short amount of time. You don't have all the information you need. And if you screw it up, the end result is horrible for the citizens who call. I think it helps you to navigate living together, you know, for the length of time that we have to live together without killing each other, you know, and sometimes we try to kill each other too, you know, but it helps to shut those instances down. Those are the positives. And I think it's wonderful. And it's part of why we love what we do. And I think it's like any other thing in life. You have to work hard to not let something that in and of itself is wonderful destroy the other things in your life that are wonderful. That part of the job is wonderful, but if you allow it to dominate, you by default cast aside the other parts of your life that are important and you lose those. It's, you know, Anne described herself being kind of the balancing person, and that really was true. And she kept me in touch with how important our home life was and the kids were. And we prioritized time with each other to make sure that we had that and we were involved with the kids. And I'm telling you, man, firefighters, you are going to want to make sure you do that because your kids are going to grow up and they're going to go away. And, you know, you will probably still be close to them to, you know, to some degree, depending on how life goes, but you'll probably still be close to them. But it will never be like it was when they were little and they were, you know, beholden to you. They'll go on and they'll have their own lives. That part will be gone. What a drag, you know, when that happens, if you put all your eggs in that basket, now they're gone, they're doing their own thing. And now you're left with nothing at home. That's a, you know, that's a terrible thing. The same thing's true with the fire service. I, depending on how we do the marriage class, we end with some form of a slide of my bunking gear hanging on the coat for on the hook for the last time. And I took that picture literally 10 to 15 seconds before I walked out the firehouse for the last time. And that part of my life, at least I think, that part of my life is done. And what I think what we like to say is imagine taking that picture, walking out the firehouse. Believe me, the fire department's going to move on like that. However important you think you are, and you probably have done good things, and I'm sure some people will miss you, but somebody else is going to step into your seat. They're going to go on the runs, mm-hmm. and they're going to move on from you literally 15 seconds after I moved out the door. Yeah. What a horrible thing to now realize that that part is done and to go home to an empty house, you know, or go home to a divided, stressful, fighting type of family where you haven't built things together. I have been thinking about this a lot. Not in advance of this, just I've been thinking about it a lot. I think one of the most significant things that Ann and I have done in life that we can really, both before God, but also just to people. One of our most significant accomplishments that we can talk about is that we committed to building a life together, to writing a story together, you know, to creating this thing that only two people can build. And I'm really proud of it. And it has come at a cost. It comes at a cost. There's professional things that I was not able to do because I wanted to go home and coach the kids' ball teams, or I wanted to, you know, Ann and I have always prioritized time together. There are friends that I lost along the way because I wasn't going to a lot of the events, and, you know, a lot of camaraderie is established by going to events and doing things together, et cetera, et cetera. There's a cost. And I think when we do First Family First, one of the things we talk about is you only have so much time in a day. You only have so much energy, so much emotional resources. You only have so much financial resources. You get to spend that stuff once. You need to determine what your priorities are, and the First Family First conversation does that. You draw a stake in the ground. You drive a stake, and you say, this is what matters to us most. And we do have to work. We got to make a living, right? You want to be an honorable employee. But our family and our relationship does not take second place to that. And where you spend your time, where you spend your money, pretty much tells you where your your priorities are. And my hope is when you sit down and talk about it, that there's a healthy dose of the home life and the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with has a chunk of that.
Wow. I mean, really, you've created like a widescreen perspective on the firefighter's career and marriage, whereas sometimes we're just looking at a shift at a time. But this is such a much more macro view, and it's incredible. I'm really in awe of what you guys have created together and how you're paying it forward and getting it out there. I did want to ask this, and this is totally up to you if you're comfortable with it, but would you be willing to say something about how spirituality enters into your marriage and your relationship?
Absolutely. Mike and I are both Christians. We actually, in our book, on the cover, this was by design. I don't know if you can see us on our knees getting married. That's us.
Okay.
On our knees before God, pledging our lives to each other. And that's a sacred vow. And this is the fire service that rages all around that vow and tries to come between you. We believe that marriage is a covenant. It's something that's for life, and it's actually eternal. So that helps us see it as a priority because it was a sacred vow. And the fire department, kids, all kinds of things try to come between you for any profession, for any job, and try to replace that first love. And then jealousies and all kinds of things can come up and tear you apart. And so I just think if you believe in God and believe that marriage is sacred, as we do, you'll make every effort to put everything else second, that even the fire service, even in our relationship, we even put the kids second to our marriage, because we believe the best thing we could give them was a solid mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And so even if the kids start to dominate, and I don't mean neglect them or anything like that, just don't put them ahead of your spouse in your heart, and let the home just be all about the kids to where you lose each other as husband and wife. Those are just, again, if you, that's how we have survived, is, again, we put each other first, other than just our faith in God. Of course, God's first in our heart, but our marriage is united with God in that vow, and everything else is second, including the honorable fire service. Even that was second, because that would be failing our covenant, failing our vow. So.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. It's really exciting. I just found out today that you guys are the guest featured speakers in the 2023 Andy Fredericks FDNY Elmsford Fire Department Seminar. So I think we have a date of February 4th in Tarrytown, New York at the Marriott. So that'll be fantastic.
I get returned back there. I was with them, I don't remember now, but 5, 6, 7 years ago, and just what an incredible, they got an incredible vibe. Sid's such a great leader and such a great heart. Or, you know, you get a sense of people, and it just has a heart for getting the right tools, enabling the firefighters to have the tools to be successful, and not just with swinging an axe, interacting in the firehouse and now on the relationship side. So yeah, we're really excited. Yeah, 2023 will be here, we'll be eight variants, and who knows what else between now and 2023.
Nine more boosters.
Yeah.
What's great too is that, I kind of saw this in some of reading your literature and also talking to Sid, is that there was a little not concern, but like curiosity, like, is this a topic that firefighters actually want to talk about and hear about? And I know you guys have gotten amazing response when you've written articles and gotten out there and spoken. And the Andy Fredericks seminar typically has some very high level FDNY and other speakers talking about strategy and tactics, but this is not your typical topic. And he said that there was a high degree of interest. So I think this is, it's timely, and I'm so glad you guys are coming together to speak about that. And speaking of that, please tell us a little bit about your book, where we can find it, and all that good stuff.
Well, I'll just tell you a little bit about it. Again, it has the more science stuff, it's hard to just talk about the science and the physical effects of danger on the body. It has the science-y stuff on the effects of trauma, the effects of sleep deprivation. And then we go into the five conversations are in here in depth, and that includes reentry time, the harshness. I call it harshness, handling harshness, because that's part of the job. You have to get a little terse in your speech, how we've dealt with that, which, because I need tenderness, and noticing this harshness coming home, handling the tough runs and how we actually do that, the fix it mentality, which is also part of the fire service, how I've had to deal with that. And then the first family first, those are the five. Then we go into a lot of other stuff. How do we actually handle sleep deprivation? The importance of exercise. We touch on money issues, kids, cancer, dealing with line of duty deaths. We've had those in Seattle Fire. Plus, we also have other 22 sidebars of other fire couples have donated to the book, and there's some of their advice, even some from Australia. You know, so we've got all kinds of other tips other than just us in there. And what else? Anything else in the book? And both of our perspectives. I start the chapter, Mike finishes it. So you're getting the spouse and the firefighter perspective. And that's about it.
You know, stuff that went right, stuff that did not go right.
Yeah.
You know, some of the missteps along the way, and a little, you know, it's, as I anticipate you'd imagine, it's a little daunting to open yourself up to that degree. It's mm-hmm. easier to put up the Facebook picture of everything's cool, you know, and we have pictures like that where everything's cool, but behind the scenes, you know, we're like every other couple. Of the things that you've struggled with, we've struggled with, you know, many of the heartbreaks that you've had, and we've had them or are having them, you know, or in the middle of them. And the whole point is all that stuff in life is going to come your way. It is. It just depends on what it is, but it's coming. How much nicer to be walking side by side with somebody and navigating that together. We make no apologies about being big believers in marriage, none at all. And I know culture and society is moving away from that. I understand that here pretty soon we're swimming upstream against a culture that is working against that. That's just fine. Our message is going to remain the same. It is absolutely fantastic to be lockstep with another human being who's got your back, and you're writing a story together, and let the wind blow. You know, we'll have good days and we'll have bad days, and whatever those days bring, we're navigating it together. We're doing it as a team and doing it together. You opened this question with, is the topic of interest to people, you know, especially when you try to balance it against cool stuff like firefighting and tactics and, you know, all this stuff. We didn't know, no clue. I know when Ann first did that, she was actually kind about it, the 10-page document about how difficult it is to live with me, you know. It was so compelling, the stuff in there, and I was so caught off guard by a lot of it that I felt like it would have made a good article, and that is what prompted the first article. But we had no clue, and Fire Engineering didn't want to print it because it's a technical magazine. It's not a, you know, a relationship mm-hmm. magazine. Mm-hmm. And it's only because I had a good relationship with the editor and done a lot of things for Fire Engineering that it even got in there to begin with. Her article got more editorial comment and request for stuff than anything else I had ever written for the magazine. It was probably come to be in divorce, you know. It's no, it's just, pointed out that there's a real, everybody recognizes there's an issue, you know, we see that, everybody knows mm-hmm. there's a problem. It pointed out that we do want more information on it.
Oh, and how do they get the book?
You can get it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. You can get it from Fire Engineering Books, or you can get it directly from us. And if you want, we will personalize it for you. The cost ends up being roughly, I think, about the same. We just charge what Amazon charges. And so
I really want to thank both of you. It's such a pleasure to meet you, and you're so inspiring. And I really think that when people listen to this today, they will glean so much information And I just think the way that you look at marriage, the way that you look at fixing things together, it's wonderful. And I can't thank you enough for sharing that.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity. This was fun.
Yes. Well, looking forward to seeing you in Tarrytown, New York in February 2023. And Mike, thank you so much for being with us and sharing everything you've spoken about. It's just very much needed in the fire service. And keep doing what you're doing.
God bless, man.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. This was fun.
For sure. So everyone, check us out on YouTube, Responder Resilience, on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and our website is respondertv.com. In the meantime, stay safe, be kind to yourself.